politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen, standing at the ready to fight anew for our life, liberty, and property, and all that matters here in the United States of anarcho-tyranny. And it is Friday. I can't believe the week has ended this quickly. We had a quick vacation. The second part of my time off will be early next week, so I will be out Monday and Tuesday. Yes, I know you are groaning, because there aren't too many places to turn to hear the unvarnished truth, truly independent conservative talk. And folks, every day I struggle between the various facets of anarchy and the various facets of tyranny, which one or select items to focus on, because there's so many and they're all existential. Today we'll focus a large share of our time on the spontaneous jihadist riots that are taking place on college campuses, where they're coming from, where they headed. We'll have a special guest coming up for that. But folks, when it comes to anarcho-tyranny, and particularly we're facing the anarchy part today, we can't afford vanity, indiscriminate reactionaryism, grifting, drifting. We need precise, fixed objectives and strategies on how to achieve them. Okay, we don't have time for distractions. And these are serious matters. What do you do when you let in millions of Muslims into your country, just like Europe did, and then they mix with the native communists that we have and get together to foment anarchy? You know, you do have to balance, obviously, civil liberties. If they're non-citizens, then they can be deported and should be deported if they're engaging this sort of stuff. If they are citizens, they have a right to protest, they have a right to assemble, but they don't have a right to encamp. And I want to start off talking about that and delving into several other aspects of this, some other issues as well. First, very appropriately, our sponsor today is Freedom Ordnance Manufacturing. This is a veteran-owned and operating American firearms company. Now is the time to get a rifle if you don't have one. And even if you do have an AR, if you don't have a Freedom Ordnance FX9 pistol caliber carbine, well, now's the time to head over to freedomordnance.com and get 17.76% off with promo code Daniel. This is regular 16-inch barrel, looks like a rifle, but it shoots 9mm and is 100% compatible with Glock magazines. This is important because, like I said, I do own rifle caliber arms, but when I practice, which is something you need to do if you're going to deal with rioting like this and whatever other threats we face, you're going to need a ton of practice, and that's why 9mm is cheaper, it's smoother, it's also easy to break people in. I do also want to promote another product that I'm going to get into as well, which is, and this one is really, really exciting. They have a product where you can now put a Gatling function on the grip that makes it so much easier, especially for those with reduced hand strength, and have a better experience on the trigger. It also, you know, speeds up the rate of firing. Again, they make great, great products. I'm telling you, folks, they are fans of this. So the FX9, the FG15 is the Gatling function. Those are the two main products there. You go to freedomordnance.com. That's spelled ORDNANCE.com. And then promo code Daniel for 17.76% off. That is a promo code only shared with this audience. Okay, so folks, you know, I just, before we go on and delve into the rioting, I promise you this will be the last time for now I deal with this. I know we spent a long time on Ukraine and FISA 702, but I want you to understand the depth of the betrayal here. I think a lot of people are creating a lot of straw men here. Just how gratuitous and unnecessary it was to give the left standalone priorities for absolutely free and get absolutely nothing in return. And Trump was the person who blessed it. He concocted the idea. Okay, I mean, this is reported by multiple sources, Wall Street Journal. So to reiterate, yes, debt ceilings, funding bills. So we already know Trump shares the view of the GOP establishment that we can't have government shut down, we can't fight on that. And he is never going to do that as president. But these were standalone propositions. You didn't have to pass FISA out of the House. I keep hearing Trump say and defend Johnson. It's not defend. He supported it. Well, we only have a one-seat majority. And the problem with that is that's an excuse if you need to pass something good and you're like, well, we don't have the support to do it, right? We don't have that base of support. There's a couple of wayward Republicans. But when you control the floor of the House, you don't have to put bed bills on the floor. And when you do, you get to choose which amendments could be offered and what is sewn into the bill. He chose to allow Mike Turner to expand FISA 702. And still Trump said, vote the way you want. Also, with FISA, we had Democrat support for getting a warrant. In fact, it was so close that Johnson himself was the tie break. So the notion that, oh, I'm supporting Johnson and greenlighting him to do what he wants because we have a slim majority, that doesn't hold weight. They absolutely could have passed a bill with Democrats to require a warrant. And then on Ukraine, they absolutely did not have to have the border security bill separate. They could have tied it together. So he blessed all of that. And by the way, it wasn't just aid to Ukraine. The new law requires the President and Treasury Department to start locating Russian assets within 90 days and seize, confiscate, transfer, or vest any Russian state sovereign asset within the U.S. jurisdiction. I mean, that's really an act of war. And I'm not pro-Russia. I hate the Russians. But I think we all agree of everything going on in the world, that's not where we need to pick the fight. So don't tell me that, oh, we're not picking a fight. We're just giving Ukraine $100 billion in weapons and then seizing Russian assets. I mean, that's going to needlessly draw us off into that. Trump supported that, all of that. So let's not lie about it. None of that had to be done. You see what I'm saying? You know, this is like, okay, we want to have a specific strategy with a government funding bill, but we can't pass the appropriation bill because we have a narrow majority and there's a few Republican dissents on each version. That's an argument for that. Not that you needlessly need to pass every Dem priority, put it on the floor with their amendments strategically sewn in, but not our amendments, in the most devious way. That's what Trump just blessed. So that has a lot of foreboding, really, on what Trump is going to do as president, that he is going to broadly, strategically oppose things in his public record while quietly acceding to the system and saying, yeah, this has got to be done. Do what you need to do. He did that as president. He would do that again. And again, my point being that if we don't pressure him, you're going to get more of the same. It's that simple. But let's go back to the protests, okay? What's going on is BLM 2.0, okay? It's the bastard child of BLM. I think what they were inspired by is this notion that you can just riot endlessly. And if you have the right cause behind you, then the cops will stand back. That premise was established, sad to say, under Trump. That is on par with his failures on COVID, is his failure on BLM. And again, that wasn't just incompetence. That was strategically to pander to the black vote, which was dumb. And now we have BLM 2.0. Okay? Couple things to say about this. Number one, what's interesting is the riots are coming at a time when the Biden administration is the most anti-Israel they've ever been. It's not like we're Typically on college campuses, you have anti-riot, anti-war protests, right? It's been as old as the 60s. But we're not involved in any war. In fact, we're to the extent we're involved through helping in the background, we're much more involved in Ukraine. And they're not protesting that. They're protesting this at a time when the Biden administration is giving them what they want. So again, just my first observation is this is the beauty of the communist movement. They're not happy with incrementalism. If you look at a lot of their chants, they're like, we don't want two-state solution. We want Israel destroyed. And, you know, they support October 7th. They glorified it. I've said this many times. They were actually rioting as a celebration and inspiration before Israel even went into Gaza. So this has nothing to do with, you know, your disagreement with whatever you think they're doing strategically there. We know what this is about. But I think it's a great example of the left pushing their guy further to the left when he's already to the left. Yet here, we on the right will take a guy, forget about a guy who's on the right, we'll take a guy who's not on the right, he's moving more and more to the left, and we won't try to move him over to the right. So that's just one thing to learn from the bad guys. But I do want to address another aspect of this, and this is what to do with it, constitutional rights, and how I think there's a huge opportunity here with the anarchy to drive a wedge between red states and blue states. We know the wedge is there. We need to accentuate it more. We need to catalyze these moments in to affect national divorce. And the thought I was thinking recently is, again, we suffer from a mixture of anarchy and tyranny. And much to our chagrin, the tyranny, the economic tyranny, the COVID tyranny, it doesn't seem to be enough to really drive national divorce. My hope is the anarchy part, people fear for their lives. And my hope is that maybe through that, it will force a mass exodus from these blue states. And that's ultimately what we're going to need. I'm in this boat trying to figure out where I'm going to go. And to just flood red states with blue state conservative refugees and actually finally make these states red, I wonder if there is an opportunity. A lot of people are talking about the sharp contrast between what you're seeing with red states and blue states handling these college campus riots and occupations. So I wanted to first just address one point. I'm seeing some people talk about some on the reactionary right that have a thing for Jews in Israel. It's just bizarre. They agree with the left on that. They just want to blame everything on liberal Jews, even though it's not the liberal Jews supporting Israel. It's the liberal Jews supporting the Palestinians, which evidently they do. But there's a growing online right, and even certain people that are somewhat our colleagues, that are trying to say, I don't like this clamping down on freedom of speech. And they're basically trying to insinuate they're doing it all for the Jews. You know, yeah, you didn't fight BLM, but now you're fighting this because it's the Jews. It's a stupid statement because, first of all, most of these people are big Trump supporters. And what's interesting is that where did we start this precedent of standing down during BLM? That was Trump. So it's interesting. They'll never criticize him. It's always the Jews' fault, but not Trump's fault. Moreover, BLM did attack Jews left and right. In fact, our next guest coming up, Daniel Greenfield, wrote about this 4 years ago. BLM had a pogrom in LA, sacking different Jewish landmarks and everything. So they are one of the same. But, you know, constitutional questions are serious. Obviously, I do share the concern there are some GOP governors that maybe are going a little bit too far with their hate speech sort of, you know, anti-Semitism laws they're passing. You got to be careful with that. But what's happening here with the occupation of streets is a different point. And just because we are very much on guard for government tyranny and censorship, it doesn't mean we should tolerate the anarchy part either. And in fact, we need to leverage that in the proper way. And, you know, holding a protest saying, I hate Jews, I hate Israel, death to Israel, is not the same thing as rioting, creating disorder, and occupying spaces that you can't occupy without a permit. There are some permitted rallies, there are some that are not. And that is an important distinction. So I want to go through that. First, again, our next sponsor today is our friends at fastgrowingtrees.com. These trees come to your house within a day or two after ordering. They grow quickly, they grow hardy, and they have endless options for indoor, outdoor beautification, shade, fruit trees, flower trees. We got it all. We got about a dozen products from this company. It's my wife's favorite sponsor. You know, I finally told her I can't afford more of it, but you know, even though it is a sponsor. So whether you're looking to add some privacy shade or natural beauty to your yard while you still have a yard, now is the time, particularly these weeks. April showers bring May flowers. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when they use promo code CONSERVATIVE at checkout. The word conservative might have lost its meaning, but not on fastgrowingtrees.com, because it will give you that 15% off. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. So, folks, here's the deal. You don't have the right to occupy and create chaos. Okay, you have the right to assemble a protest and not be punished for what you're saying politically. Okay, singled out because you're saying America sucks, Biden sucks, Trump sucks, Israel sucks, whatever you want to say, you have the right to say that. But to have a mass demonstration, you don't have a right to demonstrate. You have a right to peacefully assemble, but you don't have the right to occupy streets or a particular venue to promote your speech. And police have an obligation to protect the rest of the citizenry, to disperse. And if you don't disperse, then yeah, they will wrestle you to the ground. And we certainly don't want to move away from that. I see some bizarre voices on the right trying to criticize this. They would never criticize it in any other context, but it's like, oh, you're doing it for the Jews. Nothing to do with that. Even without this scale of violence, government can regulate the time, place, and manner of a peaceful protest. Now, you have the right to assemble, but that doesn't, when it says that in the Constitution, you can't just take over city streets, right? So, you know, they have the right to regulate how we're going to do it. Now, they have to, you know, what they can't do is say, you know, under similar times and circumstances, we're going to allow, you know, a pro-Israel protest, but not a pro-Arab protest or something like that. But, you know, again, the Supreme Court ruled this in Ward v. Rock in 1989 with regard to New York regulations on sound levels of a rock band rally in Central Park. I mean, you can't have, like, booming music, right? That degrades the quality of life of everyone else. Even in a public forum, the government may impose reasonable restrictions on the time, place, or manner of protected speech, provided that the restrictions are, quote, justified, this is from the case, justified without reference to the content of the regulated speech, that they are narrowly tailored to serve a significant governmental interest, and that they leave open ample alternative channels to communicate that information. Like, you can't say every place is bad, but not every place is good. This is already back in 1941 in Cox v. New Hampshire. The court ruled that states and cities can require permits and fees to hold parades on the streets. Oh, what do you mean? I have the right to assemble. Well, in as much as we can't single out particular causes or speeches, but you can't just anytime you want occupy streets. So that hence the regulatory permitting process. The court wrote, this is Charles Evan Hughes, in unanimous opinion, the authority of a municipality to impose regulations in order to assure the safety and convenience of the people and the use of public highways has never been regarded as inconsistent with civil liberties, but rather as one of the means of safeguarding the good order upon which they ultimately depend. You know, again, in this case, the concern is a lot more than just noise levels and touches much more on public safety. As a court said in Cantwell v. Connecticut, a 1940 case, when clear and present danger of riot, disorder, interference with traffic upon the public streets, or other immediate threat to public safety, peace, or order appears, the power of the state to prevent or punish is obvious. Okay, I mean, that's literally why we have a government. In other words, I can't put my fist an inch from your face. And DeSantis was talking about this the other day. When you're like, we're going to block Jews from entering certain buildings. I mean, you know, yeah, you could say, I hate Jews, and we need to preserve that, your right to say hateful things, and we don't want to mirror the left with their hate speech. But at the same time, when it's accompanied by actions and this belligerence, now again, you can't throw someone in jail for being mean, but what you can do is say disperse. Disperse. And then if you don't disperse, it's not a matter of, oh, I'm locking you up because you hate Jews, hate Israel, hate America, whatever. It's because you violated the public order laws. And, you know, obviously what's taking place here is they're setting up tent encampments, and you're not allowed to do that. You know, if you don't have a preordained permit that kind of regulates the manner and time that you're doing that and duration you're doing it, you can't do that. Certainly true with public colleges. And then even with private colleges, both public and private, there also is a personal code of conduct too. So this is not so much the police, but just that you know, and this, there's obviously a lot of Supreme Court case law on this, you know, where does freedom, certain freedoms apply to school students, K through 12, college. You can't do whatever you want in a college, right? Meaning you have the right to say things and not get arrested. But if you want certain demonstrations and certain behavior, that's not freedom of speech. In other words, like, let's say I run around college and say, death to Jews, death to Jews. So there's a difference between the police grabbing you, throwing you in jail, and a judge, you know, sentencing you to 2 years in prison for being mean to a particular group of people, which obviously would be protected by the First Amendment, versus saying you're suspended. You say what you want, you just can't say it here. There is a code of conduct in a school. And the point is that all these liberal colleges, they would never tolerate, you know, white hooded KKK folks doing any of this. I'm saying even if it didn't get as belligerent or as occupying, you know, setting up these tent encampments even before that, they wouldn't allow that. So again, the police action is the dispersing of illegal occupation. And then as far as some of the just anti-Jewish stuff, depending on what it is legitimate to be governed by a college administration. Obviously, once again, you know, Florida is leading from the front. University of Florida put out, this University of Florida. And they have a very simple pamphlet of allowable activities. It's like there's no letterhead, just allowable activities, speech, expressing viewpoints, holding signs in hands. Prohibitive items and activities. No amplified sound. Okay, that makes sense. No demonstrations inside buildings. Again, it's not a violation of First Amendment. No littering, no camping, no sleeping, no unmanned signs, no blocking egress, no building structures, no camping, including tents, sleeping bags, pillows, no disruption, no threats, no violence, no weapons. Any other item? Now, I know some of you don't like the, you know, no weapons, but again, that's just equally applying what's already there. I mean, I agree in getting, you know, rid of anti-campus carry, but once you have it, you can't make an exception for the Hamas bros. Any other items or activities deemed to be non-compliant with policy and regulations by university officials. And then it just has a thing, consequences. Individuals found responsible for engaging prohibitive activities shall be trespassed from campus. Students will receive a 3-year trespass and suspension. Employees will be trespassed and separated from employment. Like, done. And that's the balance. You could say what you want. You could hold up signs. What you can't do is get in people's faces, block, you know, paths, block buildings. Again, there's a mixture. Some of it's criminal activity. Some of it is just code of conduct that, you know, again, I mean, it's no different than if you have a place of employment. I don't know. You're an accounting firm, a law firm, and you want to hold a PLO protest inside of it. I mean, we're not throwing you in jail, but you might lose your job because you just can't do that. So sometimes we forget what is a fundamental right and what is not, and the consequences of that. Okay, there's consequences of free speech in both directions. I have the right to say things and not have government arrest me. But sometimes there are consequences. You could lose your job. Okay, and sometimes that's just subject to prudence, how far you want to go, what is cancel culture and how bad it is and what circumstances, but that's not a constitutional right. You know, the debate over that. So, you know, this stuff is just real, real simple. But my hope is that the chaos can actually accentuate the national divide, that we have the red states to, you know, just clamping down on this. And with the blue states, this is going to continue. This is not going away. And by the way, just while we're on this subject, I want to deviate a little bit before we bring on our guest. Speaking of Florida, recently Biden ordered through Title IX that all men have to be allowed in female sports. DeSantis put out a video and expressed the most important four words of our time. I will not comply. Take a listen here.
Florida rejects Joe Biden's attempt to rewrite Title IX. We will not comply and we will fight back. We are not going to let Joe Biden try to inject men into women's activities. We are not going to let Joe Biden undermine the rights of parents. And we are not going to let Joe Biden abuse his constitutional authority to try to impose these policies on us here in Florida. We stand with opportunities. We are not going to let Biden get away with it. We will not comply.
So, folks, I will not comply. We will not comply. We will fight back against federal tyranny. This is what we need on this issue. This is what we need on every issue. Again, this is the tyranny side we talked about before, the anarchy side. But red states need to become sanctuaries from both anarchy and tyranny. And I do wonder, as this anarchy and the security situation in this country deteriorates, whether this is really going to be the issue that pushes people over the edge. I don't know. My hope is it does. But this is what balanced governance looks like. By the way, Florida just broke the 900,000 registration advantage mark. So in other words, when DeSantis took over, Democrats had a 200,000 voter registration edge. Now Republicans have a 900,000 edge. That's a 1.1 million swing. Some of it, he changed hearts and minds. He governed properly. Some of it, he made the state attractive and a bunch of conservatives moved in. That's what we need to replicate, the self-sorting. And I really do think there's some good to this. Some of these, you know, just making blue state sanctuaries for crime, illegals, Muslim Brotherhood protests. But again, you got to get control over your universities. And this is what UF is so important. No red state institution should be ceded to the left. And I love how they're leaning in there. Again, no one's taking away freedom of speech. Okay? The same thing that would be applied to the KKK will be applied here. And then certainly if you occupy. So there's some confusion about constitutional rights. And you have to be very careful when you look at certain things like punishing or consequences. Was the person thrown in jail? Okay? Or did they lose their job because of violating a code of conduct? One is protected by the Constitution, one is not. You could agree or disagree on the prudence of that move, but it's not a constitutional right. So let's get that clear. But I want to get to our guest to get a deeper understanding of what is going on with these demonstrations. So in addition to the storm of anarchy and violence we do have the economic storm we have to weather in this country. Let's face it, between the uniparty growth of government, spending is never going down. Therefore, inflation is never going down either. That's just a reality. By the way, I don't know if you've seen the mortgage rates And the Treasury bills, they're pretty much near the highs they were at the peak of this cycle. And it is just crazy. It is crazy where we are headed with that. Credit card balances at an all-time high. Savings rate has plunged to 3.2%. By the way, it was 5.2% just a year ago. People are out of money. So the spending spree that was even keeping the economy afloat is now over with. Gold has withstood its value forever. I mean, throughout this, it's really maintained record highs. You would have gained about 18-19% from a year ago. So to learn more on how to convert your existing IRA or 401k into gold, text Daniel to 989898, and our friends at Birch Gold will send you your free info kit. Let me ask you this again. Can your IRA or 401k weather an economic storm? Think about it. Right now, it's getting eaten away by inflation. Put it in something of value by texting Daniel to our friends at Birch, 989898 today, and secure your savings today. So, folks, we have a very special guest we haven't had on in a long time. There's very few people I respect in this industry. There's a lot of just garbage, not a lot of unique thinking. To the extent there's writers, it's like rip and write. We call it in the industry, rip and write. They just, here's a story. There is a man named Daniel Greenfield. He's an investigative journalist and writer at Front Page Magazine. He is really prolific. I mean, tons of articles every week, all high quality. And he has been covering the Islamization of America for a very long time. And I figured he'd be a perfect person to bring on today to discuss all this rioting and where it's coming from. You could follow him at Twitter at Sultan Knish, SultanKnish. And also, he's the author of an upcoming book. I just saw this. Very intriguing. Domestic Enemies, Founding Fathers Fight Against the Left. A lot of good historical information there, so it's definitely on my reading list. Could pick it up anywhere you get books, and he's with us in the flesh today. Hey, Daniel, it's been way too long. Welcome back to The Blaze.
Thank you. Back then we were talking about the border invasion. This is a still border invasion, but now there's an invasion of our cities also.
Yep. No, and that's what it is. It's an invasion both from the border and also what we let in through the legal system and native, the invasion of the mind and soul of our youth. So what I'm trying to figure out is, and correct me if I'm wrong, when this started after October 7th, it seemed to be dominated by kind of like Arab immigrant looking people. But now on the colleges, you see them as well, but it seems to be more the garden variety communist leftists. Am I getting that correct, or is it all the same?
You're absolutely right. And there's two trajectories here. One is the usual Islamic supporters of terrorism. The second is with something that I call election riot phenomenon. And if you look at the BLM riots, for example, they tend to happen around elections. It's no coincidence now that we're in an election season, because you cannot have an election anymore without motivated riots. The riots might be about different things. It might be some thug getting shot. It might be about abortion. It might be about drag queens. And right now it's about Hamas, but it's really about the election. So we have the people who actually support terrorism and want to destroy Israel and America. And you have the people who want to use this for political gain. And they go from riot to riot. They go from movement to movement. And the two have come together, which is why suddenly this got very big.
So they're coming together. They find any movement. I have particularly seen that the so-called Palestine stuff seems to be enmeshed in everything, like global warming, queers for Palestine, you name it. Why is this the cause célèbre of every evil actor on the left?
They needed some basis for the riots. And in the past, they thought that the BLM stuff was pretty reliable. It might not have been as reliable this time. And they figured, right now, we've already got these protests. We've already got some riots going on. Let's jump into this. Let's exploit this. Let's make this the new thing. Because if you keep writing about the same thing every time, it gets boring. And Alinsky warned not to let any kind of cause get boring. So right now, they're going to go in on this. And they're getting a lot of buy-in. A bunch of these leftist college Marxists, have no clue what they're protesting about. People go up and ask them something, and they don't even know what's going on. They're asked from the river to the sea, where, what river, what sea. They have no idea. But it doesn't matter how many of them understood BLM, how many of them understand any of the stuff they're protesting for. They're useful idiots.
So my question is, what set this off and what's behind it? Clearly, this is not spontaneous. It's not like there's one particular image that came out last week when this kind of, you know, kicked into high gear. What's astounding here is, you know, it's not like we're involved in a war here. We're not involved in a war. The Biden administration is taking the side of, Hamas more than ever. So it's not like there's a particular new policy that occurred. To the extent that they feel that America still supports Israel in some way, we're supporting Ukraine with even more money. And, you know, there's nothing behind that. So it's not a spontaneous kind of generic anti-war sentiment. Who and what entities are behind this?
So as I mentioned earlier, you have two tracks. The first is the Muslim Brotherhood people. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood is an organization that was set up at this point nearly a century ago. And it's really tied to a lot of the political and the terrorist movements. Al-Qaeda, for example, is dominated by a branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas is also a Muslim Brotherhood organization. And the Muslim Brotherhood, which operates a lot like an Islamic version of the Communist Party, also came to America. They set up a lot of their people here in universities. They were used as cheap labor. This is, again, an immigration issue. Some companies, some colleges wanted cheap technical labor. They wanted engineers. They wanted workers. This is how we got the whole situation in Dearborn, Michigan. So they brought these people. They set up their Muslim Brotherhood operations. And they set up their own networks of front groups, including operations that now control mosques and operate on college campuses. Then you had the rise of a so-called pro-Palestinian movement, which had itself been created in part with backing from the Soviet Union. So they had buy-in from all these various Marxist organizations. And on top of that, you now have funding from the same people who fund a lot of the riots and protests in America. Generally, if you want to know who's funding identity politics activism, you can go to the Ford Foundation. And unsurprisingly, the Ford Foundation is involved in this, as they've been involved in Black nationalism, Latino nationalism, LGBTQ protests, so on and so forth. So we see that some of the protests, particularly at Columbia, have coordination from a group called Palestine Legal. If you look at who funds Palestine Legal, unsurprisingly, you're going to see the Ford Foundation's name on it. The Ford Foundation was also a big player in the BLM riot, so they have a lot of experience doing this. Another trajectory, which is going to surprise absolutely nobody, is George Soros. The Soros network is putting money into various organizations that are at the heart of the protest. I could name some of them, things like Westpac, JVP, If Not Now, Within Our Lifetime is benefiting from a cutaway that is also getting money from the Soros network. And they're also picking up money from the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. The Rockefeller Brothers Fund is not as involved in domestic issues, though they're obviously a leftist funder, but they're also very interested in anything international. The Rockefeller money came in part from oil, and so they have a lot of ties to foreign countries, which is another angle here, because a lot of the funding from this is coming from abroad. It's coming from foreign and enemy countries, including the Middle Eastern countries like Qatar, like the United Arab Emirates, like Saudi Arabia, which have put a lot of money into American universities, particularly those universities that are politically influential. Now, the interesting thing about Columbia University is that it's one of the feeders for A, journalism, and B, foreign policy. And those are, like Georgetown, yes, those are the ones that foreign governments love to target because they can influence a whole generation, including of the foreign policy people they're going to be dealing with. They want to be able to manipulate the foreign policy people at the State Department that they're going to be dealing with 20 years from now. So they invested a lot of money into creating departments, into shaping curriculum, and also into funding activism on campus. They did it in clever ways. They did it by donating below the limits. They did it by donating to organizations that themselves donate to organizations. So you have these vectors. You have foreign money. You have domestic money. You have the usual left that just funds any kind of riots. You have the Muslim Brotherhood, and you have foreign enemy nations.
Now, I see you singled out someone. You've written about this professor, Hayden Bazian, a researcher professor at Berkeley. Could you tell us a little bit about this guy and why people need to know his name?
So Hayden Bazian is the typhoid Mary of campus activism. He started out at Berkeley at San Francisco State University, where he was organizing all the stuff we're seeing now when it wasn't a nationwide issue on campuses. He had ties to, obviously, academia. He's become a professor, but he also had ties to Muslim Brotherhood type organizations. He's a co-creator of Students for Justice in Palestine. Now, SJP chapters on campuses are major players in all this. And when they set up the SJP chapters on campuses, that meant they benefited from student activity fees. So one of the answers, who is funding all this? Well, one, college students are funding this because their activity fees are going into this. One of the things these organizations did very quickly on was try to capture student government. Generally, what leftist groups do is try to capture student government. Most students don't bother voting in elections, and the left gets its training taking over student government, at which point they can move money to all their organizations. And that means that when SJP brings a radical leftist or Islamist speaker to campus, including one of the co-conspirators in the World Trade Center bombing, which they do on a regular basis, it's funded by student activity fees, and it also means it's funded by taxpayer money. SJP, however, also benefits from funding from the Soros machine. So Hayden Bazian helped put a lot of this infrastructure in place. He's still a professor. He's still highly active in promoting all this and in finding intersections between leftist activism and Islamic activism. And this has really been the anchor of this marriage between what some people call the Red-Green Alliance. The left is obviously on the lookout for minority groups that they can activate and radicalize and organize. And they needed people like Bazian, people who would be very amenable to pushing their political agenda, the class warfare stuff, the anti-American stuff, and provide academic sanction for it. So Bazian co-created Students for Justice in Palestine. He also co-created another organization called American Muslims for Palestine, and both of those organizations became major players with a lot of funding in the campus riots.
Have you heard anything recently from the Muslim Student Association, one of the older groups?
So the Muslim Students Association is active in a lot of what is going on here, and really the MSA outsources a lot of its work to Students for Justice in Palestine, and because it functions on a lot of campuses as a kind of arm of the movement. And the Muslim Students Association was created by Muslim Brotherhood people. So again, it's a key link in this network. But MSA is more explicitly targeted at Muslim students, and they've obviously been very active. So a lot of their activism is done in partnership with SJP.
So, I mean, very clearly, this is BLM 2.0. You know, again, first BLM was, you know, not surprisingly, as you mentioned, the last presidential election. This one's coming in 4 years later. Do you see any subtle differences with this impending riot movement that's probably going to consume the country in the coming months versus what we saw 4 years ago?
There's definitely a lot more foreign money, as I mentioned, in here. One of the really freaky vectors, I could talk about funding all day, is something called the People's Forum, which became the subject of investigations about a year or two ago. The People's Forum is this radical leftist group in New York. The interesting thing about it is it's actually funded out of China by a millionaire named Nevaroy Singham. Singham is a kind of Obama figure. He had a radical father. He came to America. His father was an academic, a Marxist academic, but Singham himself became a millionaire, a lot of Wall Street money again, which is another, tends to be another factor in this. There's a lot of Wall Street money going to these organizations. And Singham then moved to China. He now funds a lot of these radical leftist groups that, yes, protest for Hamas, but also agitate for North Korea, for Cuba, with the explicit goal of overthrowing America. So Chinese money is absolutely a factor here. Singham married the co-founder of Code Pink, and Code Pink now comes to Congress and doesn't just demonstrate for Hamas. It protests in favor of China and warns against any escalation with China. So it's just an example of how much more foreign influence, foreign money there is with this cause, because BLM was only of so much interest to foreign governments. They try to use it to influence America, but this situation with a foreign war, there all these foreign governments, whether it's China, whether it's Middle Eastern government, are very, very interested in it.
So one thing, I wasn't planning on bringing this up, but you presented such a powerful nexus of all the vectors of funding an organization behind this movement. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention a new budding branch of this. So every branch that you showed is anti-American, foreign, domestic, communist. But I'm sure you've noticed, there's no way you did. I mean, you and I have not spoken about this, but it's growing. We're seeing it online. But I do see even from some colleagues of mine, former colleagues of mine on the right, a bizarre growing somewhat affinity for Gaza, but certainly dislike of Israel and kind of Jews in general, blaming Jews and Jewish globalists are behind all this. But obviously what you're painting here is that it's all the organizations behind everything they claim to hate that's funding this side of it. Do you think, is this, here's my question to you, assuming you've observed this trend as I have as well. I mean, you can't miss it from people like Tucker. I'm sure you've seen some of the things he said. Is this just sort of a misguided intellectual reactionaryism, or is there an angle? Because the Islamists are smart and they want to fund every last angle they could create to subvert. And if I were them, I wouldn't want to have 100% of the left, but then 0% of the right. I would want to diversify my portfolio a little bit. Is some of this being astroturfed on the right, or is it just kind of intellectual reactionaryism?
So some of it is, you know, grifter influencer culture where people are looking for exciting new takes. But some of it definitely is affected by foreign money. Tucker is a great example. When he was on Fox News, he was great. You know, he was talking about American issues 99% of the time. There was a strong focus on America. He leaves Fox News and something very weird happens. He starts doing this international tour. One of the places he goes to is Dubai. And he's at this big, their version of the, you know, World Forum thing with all these Arab Muslim leaders, Arab Muslim bankers. And he's talking about how horrible America is. And it's weird. It really very much looks like, you only go to Dubai for one reason, which is that you need money. And Tucker is being backed by a Pakistani Iranian banker named Omid Malik, who's supposedly running his anti-woke capitalism. So there's definitely foreign money in play here in some arenas. But some of this is also the transformation of the conservative movement from groups. You know, a lot of conservative ink groups were bad. They wasted a lot of money. But there was a sense of you knew where the money was coming from and what was influencing them. You didn't have to ask who was funding Heritage, for example. You knew the big funders of these institutional organizations. With these social media influencers, you don't actually know who's funding them. And it's pretty clear that in some of these cases that they're being funded, that they're getting money from abroad. Because, yes, it's, you know, the Israel stuff. They're suddenly very enthusiastic about the same Hamas movement that drove out Christians in Gaza. Yep. And by the way, the same Muslim Brotherhood that was driving out Christians in Syria, they were on the other side of that. Now that's completely switched.
It's just weird to me.
Yeah, it is. There's clearly foreign money in play here. And some of these people are themselves foreign, which is another thing we don't talk about. We have people who are themselves foreign, who set themselves up like Americans, because on social media can pretend to be anything. One of my favorites was having this interview with this guy. And, you know, before the interview, he's talking to me, he's using a foreign accent. And then, you know, suddenly the interview's on, he's got an American flag backdrop in his background, he puts on this trucker hat, and he sounds like he's from Michigan, or there's definitely foreign influence here. And a lot of Americans are being fooled by people who are actually not even American.
Because something just doesn't sit right with me. I don't care if you love Israel, Jews. I don't care what your opinion is. If you're America first, fine, just kind of ignore it and focus on your thing. But what's bizarre is some of them are just going out of their way. Like you mentioned with Tucker, I mean, I've focused on domestic issues a lot more than he has. I mean, it's almost like he was in Spain, Ireland, Italy, you name it, Argentina. Then he went to Canada, everywhere. And then, you know, we had the worst slaughter of Jews in October 7th. So, you know, some people focused on it a little bit. It was kind of a big story. And it was like, oh my gosh, you know, did America first. And I also think you're bringing up an important point. I mean, people like us don't have such nice things to say about our country now. And in fact, a lot of us want national divorce and reinvent America under red states. But at the same time, I'm not going to go to Dubai or Moscow and somehow say that either. I mean, that just, it's not exactly swimming in the same direction. So it does disturb me. I think of this, I'm sorry, did you want to comment on it?
Yeah, one of the most disturbing clips I saw was actually Tucker Carlson in Dubai. And he's talking about the Sheikh of the UAE and saying that, you know, how fantastic he is, how wonderful he is, and how we need leaders like that. That's not the old Tucker who was just generally skeptical of everything. This is a guy who goes to a foreign country and flatters its leader while running down America. I know if you want to be skeptical in general, that's one thing. When you start brown-nosing to foreign dictators, there's just something wrong there.
Yeah, no, I mean, that again, you know, most things in life are, there's a right guardrail on the road and there's a left guardrail. And there's no like, oh, well, I don't like this, so I'll react in that way. I mean, you got to be precise. It's a circle. It comes around and then you just, you know, land in the same place. And it's just so bizarre. Again, it doesn't mean you have to obsessively be pro-Israel. Focus on your issues, whatever. But to start taking the side of, what do you have in there? The Ford Foundation, the Rockefellers, Soros, the Wall Street money, China, you know, you name it, everything, you know, involved with political Islam. It's just really, really bizarre. Qatar as well. This all ties into your book, a really exciting looking book that I just ordered. It's coming out in just next week. So you could pre-order now, but it'll be out by the time you get it. Domestic Enemies, Founding Fathers Fight Against the Left. I just want to read for the public what's on your flap and get your comment on it. The left was here long before the 1960s, calling for the execution of George Washington, plotting to stop the ratification of the Constitution, collaborating with foreign enemies, stolen elections, fake news, race riots, globalism, and socialism aren't new problems. Americans face them from the very beginning. Now, I like to think that we didn't have modern leftism before fairly recently. A man's a woman, a citizen's not a citizen. I'm kind of intrigued by that. Just give us a synopsis of where you're coming from.
A major reason why I wrote this is because, yes, people have this perception. Everything was fine until maybe the 1960s or the 1920s. And then these radicals came in and the left took over. And that's not the case. We were really fighting the left from the very beginning. The French Revolution unleashed this global movement, this global leftist movement, one which actually tried to seize power in the United States, which came after George Washington, which tried to block the adoption of the Constitution. And yes, they were not into transgender stuff so much, though they had their own sexual identity politics, which I actually discussed. There were communes being set up, socialist communes being set up in the United States already in the 1820s. And the left was highly active in pursuing its larger goal of a global revolution. This book actually talks about how the origin of the Democratic Party lie in the democratic societies which were set up by agents of the French Revolution in the United States in order to spread the French Revolution to America. So the same problems, race riots, rigged elections, the origins of a lot of the issues we're dealing with, inflationary spending, were absolutely an issue back then. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, they all dealt with this stuff. They had to deal with it. And the United States prevailed despite that, because a major problem I find on the right now is a sense of despair, you know, being blackpilled. We cannot solve these problems. These problems are completely hopeless. The left is going to win. We might as well just give up, or, you know, reserve our focus on occasionally expressing our discontent, but we're not going to change anything. And the reality is this has been an ongoing struggle for over 200 years, and we absolutely can win this. And if we know the history, if we know where we came from, we can win.
Wow. That is, again, very interesting. And I wasn't even going to bring you on for this, but then I discovered your book and I'm like, wow, this is something people really need to check out. Domestic Enemies, Founding Fathers Fight Against the Left. Understand the past and you will learn from it. And again, we can follow you at Salton Knish. All of your articles, just all high quality at Front Page Mag. Just click on Daniel's author page there, and you'll see the chronology of his articles. We'll definitely have you back to discuss the book in more detail. We really look forward to getting your updates on this issue and other issues as well. And thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much for a great conversation.
God bless. So again, that was Daniel Greenfield. Certainly very enlightened conversation there. Lots of interesting things to dissect. The deep nexus of all the domestic enemies mixing with foreign enemies, the left mixing with Islam, anarchy mixed with tyranny. Again, we got to fight both things on both fronts. And, you know, we got to protect against government power, but there are times you have to wield it against the anarchists when you have control of it. And this is really what needs to accentuate the national divide. I just want to end off with one story to bring home this point. You know, a lot of these blue states, even after the Supreme Court ruled in the Bruin case, they have a right to carry. They're convicting people for carrying in different places. And there's a story in New York of this man, Dexter Taylor, that they went after for carrying in some sort of building that constitutionally had the right to carry. And there was this female judge that disrupted his lawyer's opening statement multiple times as he tried to set the stage for Taylor's defense. And at some point, she, you know, the lawyer was talking about the Second Amendment, and she interjected and said, quote, "Do not bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. It doesn't exist here, so you can't argue the Second Amendment. This is New York." And I was thinking, that's what it means to have a movement. That's the culmination, the fruition of a movement that you're like, despite all the obstacles, the Constitution, law, we do what we want here. That, my friends, is where we need to head in red states. This is Idaho. This is Texas. This is Tennessee. We don't do anarcho-tyranny. We don't do illegal immigration. We don't do the Muslim Brotherhood. Okay? We don't have COVID tyranny. It doesn't happen here. And nothing gets in our way. We already have a national divide. We already have a cold civil war. It's just in one direction. This is the thing. So, you know, if the anarchy makes people feel more uncomfortable, all the better. But this notion that in the red states, we shouldn't clamp down on it, oh, because, like, I'm seeing some arguments, well, Abbott doesn't clamp down on the border, but he fights for the Jews and protects them on the college. Well, what the hell? I mean, you know, one right doesn't, you know, if you have five challenges and a governor's confronting one but not the other, you know, the problem is not to get him to stop confronting the one he is to get him right on the other thing. It's just some of this stupid stuff. Again, like Greenfield was saying, I don't think most of them are funded. Most of them are followers of what's become a groupthink of this little online ecosystem that they have. But there are some of them at the top that I do wonder if there's some Islam funding to try to make inroads into the right. And that is very, very dangerous. Needs to be rejected outright. Lots of good stuff. We're going to get into, I'm going to get back to some COVID stuff next week if we have time. Terrible news on cancer as we're seeing. And then also state-based illegal immigration enforcement. We got the Oklahoma law. There might be some stuff going on in Florida. So we will cover that as always. I do apologize for another long weekend. So, you know, still shoot me an email at danielhurwitz@startmail.com. I might be a little bit delayed, but I'll be out Monday and Tuesday. I will read your emails and we'll be back in full force on Wednesday. Have a great weekend. Micah 6:8, and God bless y'all.